Hello, this is Women Are Not Funny Radio, and I'm your host, Kay Ballard. Today, we're going to be talking about coming of age, and not in the usual sense of that term, but sort of, because writing a book and having it published by a major publishing house is a coming of age story. It's a coming of age of a sort for certain people. People we like, people like our guest today, will be welcoming visionary author Julia Rogers Hamrick, who has a brand new book, Choosing Easy World. In fact, her book is so brand new that it won't be released until August 3rd. But you can pre-order it on Amazon, and you can order it now. So why don't you do that while I'm telling you about the fact that I had a terrific week. Well, not really, but did you notice how convincingly I said that? I almost convinced myself. But here's the reason I think my week was pretty much okay. Is last week on Women Are Not Funny Radio, I went back to my familiar habit. Or maybe you could even just call it that. I went back to my familiar, and I gave in to my ongoing and somehow innate desire to bash Ann Curry. And even though last week I was only vaguely unkind to her, I referred to her gaffe at her commencement speech at Wheaton College, and I did use the word idiot twice, which I enjoyed enormously, but it just kind of made me feel good, made me feel like I was back in the game. And those good feelings in some ways lasted all week long. Another reason I had a good week is that immediately following the show, I had a long and lovely conversation with a real superstar in internet radio, Susan Bratton. She's the host of Dishy Mix, which is known as the number one social media and business-related internet radio show. She's also CEO of Personal Life Media. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're wondering why would the two high priestesses of internet radio be getting together to talk? Well, the fact of the matter is, it was just one more opportunity for highly ranked industry insiders to get together, and we were really mostly involved in gossip, you know, industry insider gossip, and you can imagine she wasn't necessarily coming to me for tips, but on the other hand, why do you think Susan is so good? Throw that up. Another thing about last week that I just have to mention, you recall our guest was my sister, New Jersey fitness trainer Holly Binge. And the reason she was my guest is, yes, she is my sister, but more importantly, it was the last week of Fitness Month on Women Are Not Funny. Oh, goodness, I'm so glad we're beyond that. But here's what she did. Now, this is incredible to me. She left our fancy sound studios here, or wherever she was, and she went straight to her new beach house in New Jersey. She and her husband recently bought a beach house on the Jersey Shore. And for the Memorial Day weekend, they entertained, this is if I'm doing my math right, and I believe I am, they entertained 13 teenagers. My niece, who has just completed her freshman year at University of Rhode Island, invited 7 of her friends, and my nephew, who is in high school, invited 4 of his friends. So, counting their own children, they were hosts to 13 teenagers for the Memorial Day weekend. So, you know, the premise of the show is that women are not funny. I think this would be a good example that sometimes women are nuts. But someone who knows a lot about teenagers is today's amazing guest, Julia Rogers Hamrick, because among the many things about her that are so fascinating, she fell in love to the extent that she was willing to become the stepmother to four daughters, and the youngest of them just graduated from high school this year. So that's rather amazing. She's an author and a spiritual teacher, and she's modern and sophisticated in her use of Web 2.0 tools. She blogs. She is a rather prolific user of YouTube. She, I think, could even be fairly categorized as an early adopter of that technology, which is fascinating to me that she embraced it to get her message out. And I know you are going to want to know all about her new book called Choosing Easy World, and that you'll want to know how it would be easy to choose a life of ease. So I say just buy the book. Okay, because I want to talk about other things. Today I want to talk to Julia about, well, one, her decision, her recent decision to play with the big kids. I want to talk to her about her book In Disrespect. I want to talk about the little known and vaguely dangerous side of book promotion. And I also, this is self-serving, I admit it, but I want to know more about possible career opportunities in what I might call woo-woo world. So I want to talk to Julia about all those things, but first I must ask you, and Julia, don't be offended, because I ask these questions of all my guests. In fact, last week, as you know, my sister was my guest, and I even had to ask her. So here's what I want to know. It may sound accusing. It's really not meant that way, but I have to know these things in advance. It adds some context to me, for me, to the conversation. Are you, Julia Rogers Hamrick, are you using your appearance on Women Are Not Funny Radio as a stepping stone to something bigger and better?
Well, you know, if I can figure out how to do that, absolutely. I'm a shameless self-promoter, so yes, Kay, can you give me any ideas of how I can parlay this into something even bigger?
Well, you know, it's hard to imagine, I know. On the other hand, many have, Julia, and I think there's probably an opportunity for you, but here's what I'm also worrying about a little bit. Are you secretly planning to take over my show?
Now, if I were secretly planning it, would I tip you off like this?
Well, no, but, you know, I don't want you to think I have a suspicious nature, but I have to be, you know, I have to be somewhat protective, because I have this tendency to only invite the talented and the clever, you know, to the program. Mm-hmm. So you can see that inherent in that there is something of a danger. Anyway, I would really be in favor of almost anything that would lead to your success, but for that, please leave me with my show. You know, that's just,
you can
that's
have your show, and if I decide I want a show, I'll figure out how to have my own.
There you go. Well, I mentioned that you are a blogger and that you're very adept and savvy in the use of social media, which I think is so cool. Do you consider yourself geeky?
Mm-hmm. Not really, and I think you're giving me way too much credit. I'm not so much savvy, because that implies that you have a vision, you know what you're doing about social media and all that stuff. I just sort of blunder my way through because I have a message that I feel is really important to get out to the world. And so I'm just always looking for channels to get the job done. And I've just kind of happened upon all this stuff. So to call me savvy is a wonderful compliment, but it's not entirely accurate.
Oh, listen, Julia, claim it, lady. Just claim it, because I am serious, and you may, you know, all of us, I think that's the nature of social media. Yes, we're blundering our way. We don't really know, you know, we don't really have a past, but you are trying a lot of different things, and you're rather effective at it. And I, seriously, you were an early adopter of YouTube, which I think is very bold and very, very cool. But you blog, and I mentioned this thing I read on your blog, and I have to tell you, I was struck by it and very, very, very charmed by it. When you made the statement, here you are on the verge of this book coming out on August 3rd. How exciting is that? And you're doing so much work to make sure that it'll be a success, as all authors have to do, even if you are with a major house. But one of the things that you wrote on your blog that just moved me enormously was your statement that you were ready to play with the big kids. And I love that kind of out there determination and stepping forward. I mean, I just think that is, like I said, very dynamic, but also in its own way very, very charming.
Well, thank you. Yeah, you know, we all have an inner child that wants certain things, and I recognize that, you know, one of the things that my inner child wants is to play with the big kids, to be recognized the way that the sort of the household names are recognized, and to have interactions with the big kids and to feel the energy and the power that seems to be embodied by certain people who have been successful and all that stuff. And I'll have to say, you know, I've been at this for 30 years, so my overnight sensation or how that's going to appear, I may appear to be an overnight sensation to some people who've never heard of me before, but I've been plugging away, wishing to play with the big kids for a lot of years, and finally I just went, you know what, I'm ready to play with the big kids. And before that I could say that, I probably had to say, I'm ready to be ready to play with the big kids, which is a great sort of self-growth hint. If there's something that you want to be ready to do and you say, I'm ready to make a bunch of money or whatever it is, I'm ready to attract a wonderful relationship. And when you say it, if you feel like a fraud when you say it, you know, inside, because there's something that just kind of wimps out in you when you say it. Like sometimes when you say just about any affirmation, there's a denial inside of you. My wonderful friend and sort of therapist person, Mary Mooney, taught me this. She said, if you say, I'm ready for something and you don't feel ready, just say, I'm ready to be ready. And that helps you advance in your readiness. So that's a little helpful hint for listeners today.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Now, Julia, I was very convinced in your blog, and I knew exactly what you meant, and I do, you know, I was aware that you had been toiling at your craft and your philosophy and your work for a period of time, and your statement that you're ready to play with the big kids was very, very, like I said, very convincing to me and very charming. But I started, you know, I have this fault, I suppose. Maybe it's, speaking of charming, I do like to believe that my faults are charming, but this may or may not be. I just kind of, you know, sometimes step in and take over when I'm not invited. And you didn't really ask me for any sort of advice, like who, you know, which big kids should I play with, or, you know, any of that. But I started thinking about it, and I thought maybe that, well, I just kind of almost put together a posse. I'm thinking of you hanging out with Martha Stewart and Suzanne Summers and Madonna And then someone that I think we should remember, you know, she's kind of out of the limelight now, but she's a big deal, and she wrote a lot of books and was on TV certainly for a long time, Joan London, you know.
Hmm.
So it's kind of a blonde posse, you know, of big girls that I can just kind of envision you hanging out with, you know, spending the weekend with Martha, maybe doing some babysitting for, you know, Joan London has really dozens of children by surrogates, and you could maybe babysit her children. And that's kind of what I was thinking about for, you know, this future of hanging out with
Well, you know, I didn't really think about babysitting when I was saying I want to play with a big kid. I kind of met the big adult.
I just, you know what? I just figured that's, you know, there are going to be babies. Of course, what I'm thinking of the babies probably aren't, you know, they're probably not babies anymore. But the thing is, I came up with a different idea, you know, something that might even be more fun than that. And I have a little song. I told you about this a few moments ago. There's this fabulous acoustic guitarist in Great Britain who is a composer for movies, and he does these wonderful instrumental pieces. Now, what I'm going to play for you today, with his permission, thank you, Matt, is called Burning Bandstands, and it is quite syncopated. It may surprise you at first, and then it changes. It's a very original piece, but the title of that piece leads us to a great idea I have for you. So I'm going to play it now and see what you think. Matt Stevens, Burning Bandstands.
Thank you.
Well, Julia, that was a little bit aggressive, don't you think?
Well, it's funny because the very first part of it, I thought, oh, difficult world. Sounds just like difficult world. And then the melody came in, and I thought, oh, easy world. And then it kind of started blending, and I thought, wow, that's just like life. It's we're straddling easy world and difficult world at the same time. So that song was great. I thought it was a really cool song.
It was very, very determined. And my question for you is, are you musical?
I wouldn't, not so much. A little. I love
well,
music.
Well, that sounds perfect. Because here's my idea, and that's the reason I wanted to play a song called Burning Bandstands.
But I'm not burning anything. I'm not a pyromaniac. Will not torch anything.
No. But I see you on the bandstand, burning it up with that group, that famous group, the Rock Bottom Remainders. You know, Dave Barry has a rock band with Stephen King and Amy Tan. And
oh, I can play the tambourine or the cymbals or something.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. You know, I mean, that would be, in my opinion, that would be the epitome of playing with the big kids, you know. And I see this for you, and I actually have a little bit of an in with Dave Barry, you know. And so we need to see what we can work out on this one, you know, because wouldn't that totally by definition be playing with the big kids?
Yeah, that would. Although, let me just tell you that when I think of playing with the big kids, I think of playing with Wayne Dyer and Marianne Williamson and the people in my genre, and Dr. Gay Hendricks, who, by the way, I had a great phone call on Skype yesterday, a video call, and he's like a real person and funny and nice and wonderful, even though he's one of my heroes for the last couple decades. So anyway, I got to play with one of my big kids yesterday. But yeah, I'll be in the Rock Bottom Remainders, you know, if they're convincing enough and if they want me bad enough, I could pick up.
Have to woo you a little bit, huh?
Oh, yeah, you know. Well, yeah.
Well, I think so. And obviously, you know, I did totally understand that when you said you wanted to play with the big kids, it wasn't really about wanting to spend the weekend with Martha Stewart. You know, it was
She could use some easy world, Kay, so I'd be happy to do that. You know?
That would be an interesting thing, but
wouldn't you like to be there as a fly on the wall?
No. I very rarely envision myself as a fly on the wall. That's just that.
Wouldn't
no,
you like to
not,
be there taking part?
I don't know. You know what? I think everything that Martha Stewart does is perfectly lovely, but I am not a big fan of animals, you know, animals everywhere, and she has a lot of animals. So I'm sure her tarts are very convincingly tidy, but I'm a tiny bit squeamish, to tell you the truth. Now, the thing that you know, though, of course, you as we all do, have been, you know, you have these people in your vision, these big kids that you want to start playing with. One of the things that you will have to do is make sure that even, you know, when you start playing with them, that you are still kind of fun to hang around with, you know. And I think you answered that concern when you said your Skype call yesterday with Hendricks was that he was fun and mm-hmm. funny and friendly and all of that. So, you know, you are, it certainly is possible.
Well, you know, if I'm going to have a meteoric rise to high profile and I'm not fun anymore, then it would really be a drag for me. So if I'm having fun, I figure that other people will be having fun too. And yeah, so no worries.
Yeah. Now, I think what the issue is, where the issue really comes down, is other people's opinion of you changes. I don't think you change when you reach that level of celebrity. You typically don't change, but the way people view you does change. And sometimes, and I know a lot about this because, my goodness, you know, I am a celebrity myself.
Well, you're bigger than big, so, you know.
I am bigger than big. And the thing is, people do not fully appreciate the pain that comes with that. Now, it won't be painful because you are committed to living in the easy world. So
okay.
that won't be a problem. But sometimes you're a bit ostracized, you know, and because people just can't believe that you're fun to hang around with. Or a lot of times, you know, you think that the problem with being a celebrity is that people want to hang around with you. And there is some of that, but there's also the other, where they think you're just not going to be very much fun. So actually, I really stepped in this and, you know, really involved myself in ways that were inappropriate, because you really don't want to hang out with Martha Stewart and Madonna, and you don't want to babysit for Joan London, you know. You probably mm-hmm. don't want to do thigh master exercises with Suzanne Somers. You don't really
well,
want...
Well, I enjoy
not,
Suzanne. I'd hang out with her in a heartbeat. Yeah.
You'd hang out with her? Okay.
I wouldn't thigh master with her.
Well,
maybe the facial thingy, you know, where you exercise your facial muscle.
She will have something, you know, for sale that probably, there's probably something planned right now that we don't even know about. So that will be
mm-hmm.
cool. But you, the rock bottom remainders, you're open to it, but that's really not, it's more like beach walks with Wayne Dyer and things like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I just want to address one thing about what people think of me. I always love Terry Cole Whitaker's book title, What You Think of Me Is None of My Business, because I know for sure I can't control what anybody else thinks of me. And if I get caught up in that, I'm just going to be miserable all the time. So, you know, I just have to do what is in my heart to do and what I'm guided to do and let the chips fall where they may. And if I'm happy with me, then, you know, that's the thing. So,
sorry to get it
all woo-woo on you, but I just had to inject that.
Well, I don't think that's woo-woo. And I don't object to woo-woo. I'm just a little flummoxed by it. But we'll get to that. I want to talk about this task of promoting your book, because it is a lot of work and you seem so happy and enthusiastic about it, and that's very cool since it is so much work. And you know, one of the things I'm since I really know everything about almost anything, I do know a lot about book promotion, and I know a lot about all the games, gaming Amazon that people do in order to get their book to a number one status for, 2 minutes or so in one of the categories, so that they can make the claim that they have a best-selling book, and they do. And so virtually, you know, I hardly know any authors who aren't best-selling authors. You know, there is some basis on which they can call themselves best-selling authors. I just wondered if you had any plans for gaming Amazon or anyone else in order to achieve that.
Well, interesting way to frame that. We will be having an online, like, bestseller campaign. My goal is shooting loftier than being an Amazon bestseller, though. I want to be, like, a worldwide, across-the-board bestseller for my book to be, Choosing Easy World to be. And so, yeah, we're doing a campaign on August 3rd where if you buy my book, you get fabulous bonuses and you get entered into a drawing for a fabulous prize, which is basically name your own prize as a $300 gift card and all kinds of other prizes from me and from other authors and so on. But also,
well, that's cool. So really, given that, you would really rather someone who's wanting to buy your book to not go ahead and pre-order it, but to wait till August 3rd then to buy it. Is that true?
Well, actually, no, because you'll get the same bonuses if you buy it, if you pre-order it. Just save your email receipt, and then when the fill-in form comes on, excuse me, on the ChoosingEasyWorld.com website, you can fill in your stuff and collect all the bonuses. So, you know, from now until through August 3rd, you can still get the bonuses. They're just not all up yet for people to see. But,
up
to whenever you feel like buying the book is fine.
It's fine with you. Well, let me tell you, I read something that just, I thought it was rather brilliant, actually, and I agree with it. I'm not going to reveal who wrote this, but he said about his own book promotion that, and he was talking about social media, that if he had merely done a lot of promoting it, it would have annoyed people. But instead, what he decided to do was really pound it. And it was so amazing. In other words, he tweeted every 10 minutes. You know,
uh-huh.
he really pounded it. And people were drawn into it. They weren't annoyed. They were fascinated. They were just, you know, oh, my goodness. And so he actually tweeted the progress of his book on the Amazon bestseller list, and, you know, in the category,
uh-huh,
as it went, and he just kept it going relentlessly, and that people were very engaged by that instead
maybe
of
maybe they
annoyed.
Thought if
and
they went ahead and buy it that he would stop.
It could be that, but no, you know what, it really rang true to me because, you know, it was just really out there, very, very out there and determined, and I can imagine that would be less annoying in many ways than, you know, just a steady stream just to be relentless. So
it won't surprise you, Kay, to know that I have a plan for this. In fact, one of the ways you could possibly win your heart's desire through this book campaign is we're going to have it so you can register to tweet and do Facebook posts and YouTube views and stuff on the day of the campaign. And every time you tweet it or Facebook post it, et cetera, you'll get one entry into the drawing. So we're going to have not just me driving everyone bananas with tweeting. Everybody who finds out about this, who would like to earn these prizes, will be tweeting and Facebooking. So yeah, that's
See,
so
I,
every,
you know,
yeah.
And I think that's so interesting because those sorts of things, you know, I'm aware of them, and because, no offense, you're not the first to do that sort of thing.
Oh, no.
But to me personally, on a personal level, it's not appealing to me at all. You know, it's not something I would want to do, is to tweet as a contest entry or that kind of thing. But apparently a lot of people do. And you're right. You are kind of an equal opportunity annoyer. You will, you know, by doing this, you will.
Well, I'll have people annoyed at everybody, not just me.
Exactly.
And here's the cool thing, though. I just have to say this. I have so many people who love Easy World, and people can find out about that by going to iliveineasyworld.com. But they love Easy World and want other people to know about it. So a lot of them will really be tweeting and Facebook posting because they want people to know about Easy World, not just because they want to win a prize. And
well,
I think
that most of them who are tweeting will be, I think that is a much stronger motivation for most people who, and they really do want to see your book succeed, and you do too. And that is the exciting thing because, you know, the thing that we, and I think you kind of implied this in something you said earlier, but there's the reward for having your book be a bestseller is more than bragging rights, and it's certainly not even financial. It is that you get your ideas out to a hungry world, and that is what you're trying to do. And that is the bottom line. So if your book is known as a bestseller, that brings it a certain kind of attention that you can't get another way. So that makes it great. But one of the things that you'll be doing in addition to your campaign on August 3rd is you're going to be doing an enormous number, I'm certain, of book interviews.
Yes.
And you're no stranger to this, right?
No, no stranger at all. And I love talking about my book, so, yeah, and about Easy World itself, not just the book, but the stuff that's in the book, so.
Well, yeah. You know, I have a couple of questions for you about that and about that process. Is it your preference to be interviewed by someone who's actually read the book?
Of course it is.
I'm really remarkably impressed that you said of course it is, because I just wonder, you know, I think it could go either way in terms of that being a good thing or not. How frequently do you find that people have actually read your book when they're interviewing you?
Frequently. Well, with choosing Easy World, it hasn't been out that long, but I've sent galleys and, you know, people have had access through PDF to read it. And if you would like to, you can read it too. But I usually send it in advance. But anyway, you know, they have read at least part of it and have really intelligent questions. Because, see, here's the issue with talking about Easy World. I'm talking about a paradigm shift, something totally different than the way we're used to viewing the world and understanding the world. And so the more groundwork that's been laid in the person I'm talking to about it, the more it sort of intelligently we can talk. And they usually don't just give me just softball questions or, you know, they help their listeners to really grasp the ideas and to find value in the conversation. So, you know, that's the thing when you're in the spiritual growth area of things, you tend to attract other people who are committed to that same thing. So when we talk, and now I realize that when I'm playing with the rock bottom remainders and stuff, the people interviewing me are not necessarily going to be on my team of promoting Easy World in a conscious way. They may be all skeptical and they may challenge me, and that's fine. I can handle that. I know what part of them that is that wants to challenge me, and that's the part that fears Easy World, because in Easy World, the fearful ego just doesn't exist. So, yeah, that's not a problem. But what I'm enjoying at this point in things is the people that ask me to come on their shows, for the most part, are people who get it and who get Easy World and who are excited about it. So, yeah, I realize I'm kind of in a honeymoon period here, but yeah, I like it.
Oh, and there's no reason that won't continue. But have you ever encountered, and listeners should know, this is not Julia's first book. She's written another book as well. But do you ever encounter the kind of annoying situation where someone is so proud they've read your book that they wear it like a badge, and they go into this, the purpose of their interview is to prove to you that they have, in fact, read your book. So
I've never encountered that, but it sounds like a nice little ego boost. That'd be fun, too. But generally speaking, no, that hasn't happened.
And that's funny because in saying this, I don't mean to imply that you are not, or that you haven't done this as well, but I am something of a student of the book interview, and I have listened to a lot of them and done a lot of them, but I've listened to a lot of them, in terms of evaluating them. And it's one of the more annoying styles of interviewing, doing a book interview. Say, page 74, when you said blah, 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 frequently the person sitting there with their notes and their page notes is, more cognizant of what is on any given page or any given chapter than the poor author is.
But, I've seen Oprah do that, and she's welcome to do that with me. I can handle that.
You mean you would put up with that from Oprah, huh?
I would. I'd tolerate it. Yeah, sure.
Well, another thing that crosses my mind is, as you go through this, and you'll be doing, as many as you possibly can, I assume, do you worry about the possibility that you might sink into what I would call self-cliché, where your material is so well tested that you say the same things over and over again because you have the timing, you have lines that you know that work, that sort of thing? Do you think there's some danger for you, or maybe not for you, but some unnamed author who isn't,
You mean like the history teachers who's been at the same school for 40 years and says the same thing semester after semester? I don't worry about that, because every time I talk about Easy World, it's so much fun. I feel so much energy from it. I can see how that might be an issue for some authors. And ask me again after, Easy World, Choosing Easy World becomes a New York Times bestseller, and I've had 100 more 200, 300 more interviews, and I'll let you know. But right now, no, I'm not worried about that.
Well, one of the things, you mentioned the fact that you've been doing this for 30 years. It's very, very evident in the way that you handle yourself that you know what you're doing. But it is always part of the training that major publishing houses used to give their authors is how to do book interviews and how to stay on point and how to refer to the book and all of that. And you seem very polished and capable, but the whole idea of staying on point and answering the question that you want to answer rather than the question that was asked, it's a skill and a talent that politicians, certainly successful politicians have, but it's interesting to me how someone traverses the path between spontaneity and also, really trying to stay on message and get that message out.
Okay, here I'm going to go woo-woo on you again, but
okay.
Easy World, well, first off, Easy World is such a comprehensive umbrella for everything that you can always bring everything back to Easy World. Sometimes you have to do it via talking about Difficult World, which is the contrast, but Easy World fits everything, so it's easy to segue into talking about Easy World and how it fits whatever they just asked you the question about. And also, here comes the woo-woo part, I always feel surrendered to spirit and ready for guidance, available to be guided as to what to say. So I don't necessarily jump, dance to the tune of the interviewer so much as I trust myself to be guided to say the thing that needs to be said to make the maximum impression. So, you know, and sometimes I'm more surrendered and available for that than others, of course. But, you know, being in Easy World is all about not worrying and not being subject to that fearful ego that continuously wants to put us in difficult world and wants to create fear and to trip us up through the trying to control and worry and all that. So, as long as I'm able to just stay in Easy World with everything, I trust that it's all going to flow smoothly. How was that for turning it around to an Easy World talk?
I thought it was masterful. And the thing that I am sure listeners have noticed is that you are very protective of me. You know, you warn me before you go woo-woo on me, as as I have so kindly brought woo-woo into the conversation. But let's just go there, okay? Because here's what I must know. I mean, I'll just tell you this. A woman,
go for it, Kay.
Many, many dreams and hopes and a bright future ahead for me. I, for years, Julia, have said, and I have said it somewhat as a joke, but I meant it seriously. I have said, if I were the least bit religious, I would be a preacher. Because to me, that looks like just sort of the dream job, you know. Mm. If I were religious, I could go to seminary, I could be a preacher, you know, I'm a speaker, I love a microphone, love, 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 love. And then the idea, in addition to having this platform, having people who came to me for guidance about how they should live their lives, you know, I just,
mm-hmm.
to me it sounded, you know, just sort of dreamy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started thinking about you and how you are not a preacher, but you are a spiritual teacher. And I want to know how they are different and how they are alike. Because you have a framework for people, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you have not established a religion. Easy World is not a religion. So tell me a little bit about how this career trajectory of being a spiritual teacher. I want to know more about it. I mean, I spent years thinking I blew it. I really should have been a public intellectual. That was, you know, I just didn't understand that as a career early enough. And so I had business cards printed where I call myself that. And that, I can tell you, that's not the path. That's not how you get there. That's totally ineffective. But so tell me, what is the difference between being a spiritual teacher
and a preacher?
I want to know. I want to know where you fit on that continuum.
Okay.
Of, you know, in terms of giving people guidance for their spiritual lives.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm sometimes I'm a preacher, and sometimes I'm preachy, as my husband can tell you, and he makes sure that I know, you know, that maybe that's not the most welcome thing.
Darling, it's
so
a personality trait. It's a personality trait, and
yeah.
I have it.
But you know. So, you know, you tap into your inner preacher sometimes, but basically, you know, the way I see it is I'd love to start a religion, but I wouldn't want to take responsibility for what happened to, you know, what happens to all great spiritual leaders is they are great spiritual leaders and then people form a religion around them and then the people start twisting things to suit their own agendas and then pretty soon it's all perverted and the religions are like not effective and yada, yada, yada. So, no, I actually do not want to start a religion, and I would love to be, I feel, a minister. I would love to have a church, but I don't want to be a pastor because I don't want to have to do funerals and stuff. So essentially, being a spiritual teacher gives me the opportunity to teach the inspiration that I have coming to me and to share the energy from source that I tap into and the concepts and so on to help people make a clearer sense of their lives and of their path, and I help people understand what's going on with them. And, you know, online, I actually have one-on-one appointments that I do with people that I call attunements, which is, it could be anything from like a psychic reading, although I really don't do much predictions. I'm not ever really guided for that. But to help people locate what it is that's holding them back from where they're soul or their spirit is calling them to go. So I help with that, and we do energy work, and I know that's woo-woo, but you asked for it. And so I do one-on-one counseling with people in that way, intuitive counseling. And no, I don't have like my degree as a psychologist or anything. So this is purely spiritual counseling. And I also, you know, I feel like I minister through my blog because I share my ideas and energy through the blog and through social media and with my books. And then, you know, some in person doing workshops and so on. But I'm really loving doing things online because you can reach so much farther, so much more easily with doing it online. But I'm not sure if I've answered your question exactly. But
wonderful, and it's very illuminating. But here's the thing that I really don't understand, and I really do not understand. And there's so much, you know, Julia. I'm just a rather brilliant woman, and I understand there's much about life that I do understand. This I do not understand. Okay, so there's this little blonde-headed girl. She wears mittens. She does her homework. She grows up, but at some point, you know, she becomes woo-woo. I mean, how does that happen? She's talking about energy work. She's talking about, you know, enlightenment, blah, 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 woo, 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 woo. How does it happen, darling?
All right. Here's what happened to me. I was living in Japan when I was in my mid-20s, and I got very, very ill. This is the encapsulated version. If you really want to read a more detailed version, you can read it at juliarogershamrick.com and click on Julia's books and then click on Recreating Eden and then click on Read the Introduction for free. So you can read it in there. But I was very ill when I was teaching school in Japan, and I was far away from everyone, and I had a really challenging time, and nothing that the medical establishment had to offer was helping me, and things were getting worse and worse and worse. And it came to a real crisis point, and I was devastated and at rock bottom, and that led to this amazing experience of surrender. Because what happens is when your mind finally figures out that it is not capable of solving your problem, and you throw up your hands, mentally speaking, that's when the power happens. That's when the miracles can happen, because you sort of just by default surrender to a higher power, and then the higher power is able to take over because you're not resisting it anymore through trying to control. So that's what happened to me, and within a few months, I was not only completely well, I found myself at the top of a mountain in Switzerland having an experience of cosmic consciousness, and it was just remarkable, and I can't really describe the actual experience, because when you're in oneness, which is where I was, there's nothing to compare and contrast. So I can tell you that the moments leading up to it were amazing, what I call easy world, and the moments coming out of it were amazing. So wherever I was in between the going in and the coming out had to be really amazing. And it changed everything in my life, and it really gave me such a new perception of things. And I started receiving all kinds of higher wisdom that I can absolutely tell you did not come from me conjuring it up in my little self-contained or seemingly self-contained brain, but it was coming from something way larger than me, and that stream and flow has continued, and it's gotten even more powerful as I've found outlets for it, like through writing it and through speaking it and so on. So That's how that happens.
And how did you announce to the world that this thing had happened to you?
The way I first announced it was when I was still in Switzerland at this natural healing clinic. I remarkably got invited to speak in front of a class of medical students, about 80 medical students. I was invited to speak and talk about being more than just a patient, more than just a bunch of body parts with problems when you're wanting to heal, and the power of spirit and healing. And it was so well received. I mean, these young folks were on their feet clapping and applauding, cheering. And I went, whoa, okay, I get it. This feels great. This feels wonderful, but I need to do more of it. And then gradually, we are so fortunate to live in the United States of America, those of us who do, and other free countries around the world, that we can just decide this is who I am, this is what I want to do, and do it. So I just started, I feel compelled because I'm definitely a natural born teacher, and I just felt compelled to start sharing the insights that I had. So I just set up a class and teach the class, and people would come and they would, they would listen and they would love it, and they'd tell their friends, and I'd do whatever else was moving in my consciousness in my world, and I would say, oh, I'm going to do another class on this, and I would do that, and it just built from there. So that's been going on for almost 30 years now.
Well, it's an amazing story in and of itself. I just, a couple of quick questions, because we're almost at the end of our hour. I cannot believe it. Time's gone very fast for me. Is there some measure of enlightenment that permits someone to feel that they can advance their beliefs in the way that you have?
I don't know about a measure, but I think it's an overwhelming desire to. It's always that shows you that you're plugged into the right place of what I call the design for harmony. When you feel that energy and that joy and that power, those are the signs that you're doing what you're designed to do. And so when you feel that, you want to do more of it, and you do more, and that is advancing, what it is that you are meant to be doing. That's how I see it anyway.
Well, that is so great, Julia, and I think we're going to end it there. I want to thank everyone for listening today to Women Are Not Funny Radio. And, Julia, it's just been fabulous to learn a little bit about this very big and exciting thing that's coming to pass. And it's going to be a lot of fun to watch it happen.
Oh, thank you, Kay. And I did want to also just quickly say, if you go to choosingeasyworld.com, there's also news there of a big event called 10 Radiant Seconds, or you can go to 10radiantseconds.com, which we're going to gather people from around the globe on August 3rd to radiate love together. So would love for people to go and check that out.
Yeah, that sounds like a very, very woo-woo sort of thing. Thank you, Julia.
Wonderfully woo-woo.
Wonderfully woo-woo.
Thank you.
Thank you.